No.
You got me.
Yeah. It's totally quiet now. Oh. Oh, it's, you know, it's a good story when you got Aaron to cry.
Wow.
You're going to get me again. Don't do it. Uh-oh.
Hello, and welcome to The Homestay Kitchen with me, Mary Chan, and Aaron Eastman. This is a podcast where we serve up stories of being a homestay family, the ups and downs of making a connection with international homestay students. We'll bring a plateful of stories, ideas, interviews, and hopefully dish up some anecdotes to share with our community.
Food brings people together, but what if food becomes a barrier? Eating disorders are mental health issues, and some students arrive with a negative dependency on food without you, as a host, even noticing. So what are the clues that you should keep an eye out for? Today, we chat with Carla Beer Carpenter, a registered dietitian for almost 30 years, with a passion for helping people improve their relationship with food while working towards their health and nutrition goals. In this episode, she shares tips and signs to look out for with students who may have food-related issues. She's also been a homestay parent since 2008 and has hosted dozens of students from many countries over the last decade. She reveals how hosting is an impactful experience, more than on us as hosts, but with the students. Finally, she uncovers how her own 3-week exchange as a young teenager changed her entire life. So listen in on this truly wonderful conversation with Carla Beer Carpenter that I hope inspires you as it did for us. Good morning, Erin.
Morning, Mary.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm comfy, cozy.
You're comfy and cozy.
Settled.
We're here with Carla Beer Carpenter.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I met you at an eWomen Network event, and you were talking about your business, and it just fired all these memories about international student that I had hosting that I didn't even know she had food issues while she was living with me until after the fact. She came back a couple years later to visit, and I realized she had all these food issues. So tell us a little bit about yourself, what your business is, and how it relates to hosting international students.
Sure, thank you. Well, my business name is Good Sense Nutrition. I'm a dietitian. I've been a registered dietitian for about 30 years now. And I'm also a mom to two daughters who are now pretty much grown up, 23 and 24. And I have a stepson who's 16. And I've been hosting students on and off through the International High School program here in Victoria for, it'll be 11 years now. Certainly being a dietitian is helpful in terms of we know what to eat and we know what kids should be eating. We also know what they want to eat.
Yeah. Wants versus not, needs.
Not the same thing. But I think as a person, I'm pretty good at setting guidelines. And so when I was hosting, we just talked about this before the interview about, you know, setting important and steady guidelines and rules around different aspects of living. And a lot of that includes eating. When students come to us, they come from a different country, but not just a different country. They come from a different food culture, because even in our own city here, our own country, there are so many different food cultures. And that is really an integral part of a person's family life. So it's really something that I pay a lot of attention to when I have students, is trying to figure out what their food culture was at home and how I can integrate them into our food culture. So without actually changing ours dramatically, because that's quite difficult and really not part of their experience, but also recognizing and respecting any food issues or food culture that they are coming from, I think is really important.
Can you describe more about food culture? Like, what do you mean? Do you have an example?
Some families eat dinner together. Some families eat in front of the television. Some families don't eat breakfast as a family. Some families don't eat breakfast. In some families, there's a lot of restrictive behavior around food and when you can eat it and how you can eat it and where you can eat it. And in other houses, it's kind of a free-for-all where, you know, anybody can eat anything at any time in any place and it's okay. So sometimes we don't recognize those things. You know, when people come to us, I've had lots of discussions with students about eating in their rooms. We don't allow food in our bedrooms in our house because I don't like that. I don't feel that it's very sanitary. And so sometimes that's a bit of a struggle because they may have come from a home where they're eating in the room all the time and maybe spending 18, 20 hours a day in their room. You know, that's the culture.
Is this something that you lay out in the beginning when the student arrives, or is it something that you sort of get into as the placement goes on?
I have a set of house rules that I've done up. I try not to make it too draconian or make people feel like, oh my God, I'm going to be moving into a prison, because that's certainly not a good start. But at the same time, there are some rules that are really clear. And one of them is thou shalt not eat in the bedroom, period. You can take drinks in there. You may not have a kettle in there or anything for preparing hot food, because people do like to do that. So that's the rules. You know, you can take a cup of tea in there, or you can take juice. I know that the students eat junk food in their rooms. I don't get too worked up about that because I don't think even bacteria like that stuff. So I'm not too worked up about that. You know, chips, and you know, they eat chips, and they sometimes will sneak their instant noodles in there, that kind of thing. But in terms of taking a whole meal in there or eating breakfast in your room, nope. You know, you can eat in the living room. That's no problem. You can eat in the kitchen. We have a table. You know, like a dining room table. So that's something I do lay out pretty clearly right at the beginning, just so there's no misunderstandings, because it's not comfortable to have to be correcting somebody all the time. It's uncomfortable for them. So from my point of view, I feel like it's better just to get that out in the beginning. You know, things like, we do also have a rule that will come out maybe later, but you can't spend more than 30 minutes in the bathroom at a time. And we try to coordinate shower times just so that, you know, there's not like six people trying to shower all in the morning. And, you know, if they prefer to shower in the morning, that's okay. But we need to know that ahead of time so that we can coordinate ourselves. Fortunately, a lot of my students have preferred to shower at night, which is really good for us because we like to shower in the morning.
Works out well.
Yeah. So other things like, in terms of food, what I've always done, and it was a really good suggestion given to me when I first started hosting by the first homestay coordinator that I worked with, is that rather than serving people on their plates, we put all the food out on the table. You know, we don't choose how much they eat or what they eat or what they don't eat. We give them options. I always try to have salad and bread because those are two kind of safe things. And so, you know, if somebody doesn't like the main dish, then at least there's that. And I don't do substitute meals, but if somebody really, really doesn't like something, I try not to serve it. So, you know, I try to accommodate. But, you know, our student this year, when he came to us last year, he didn't like pasta. He didn't like tomato-based anything. He didn't like spicy food. Basically, what he'd like to do is eat Asian food all the time. And in fact, he was very jealous of one of his friends who's living with the Asian family. So they eat Asian food all the time. And I said, well, you know, you're in Canada now. So the reason, one of the reasons for you being here, and because you will be going to university in Canada, is that you really do, you know, want to be extending your palate a little bit. So, you know, I'm not ever forcing you to eat anything. Nobody, I never, ever, even in my practice as a dietitian, I've never, ever told anybody they should eat things they don't like, ever. But, you know, it might be important for you to, you know, try these things. So he has gotten better. I mean, he still doesn't love spicy food. He does not love legumes. We occasionally eat vegan food because my daughter is kind of on and off vegan. So sometimes we'll have, you know, vegan curries. He doesn't love pasta, but he's gotten on to that a little bit more over the couple of years. So that's my policy, is to put it on the table, let people help themselves, take as much of something that they want, and, you know, not take if they don't like it. And that also helps me, because then I kind of learn over time, oh, they really, really don't like that thing. Maybe I will try not to make that so much, or I'll try to make it only when they're away, or, you know, same as I do with my own kids. I, you know, I don't say, oh, well, you don't like that, so I'm never cooking it. But at the same time, it's a bit cruel to serve something that somebody really, really doesn't like on a repeated basis. So, you know, I don't want to be a short order cook. And that's always, even with my own kids, that was my policy of, no, I'm not being a short order cook. Like, this is the meal that's available. And if you don't like it, there's bananas, there's yogurt, you know, you can eat those things. But, you know, keeping in mind that the students pay a lot of money to come here. And again, we're taking somebody's very cherished person. Like, that's somebody's cherished person from somebody else's, you know, parents that you want to be, you know, respectful. And, you know, I try to be fair and treat them the same as I would my own, which is that I don't cater, but I do try to offer food that they're mostly going to like. Mm-hmm. So that's my kind of my stand.
Yeah, we're very much the same way too. In my household, I call it Chinese style because that's how I actually grew up with all the food in the middle. And Aaron calls it family style.
That's right. Yeah. It is exactly family style.
Yeah, with that, when I had a student here where we serve Chinese style, family style, and I never picked up anything about her eating habits until, like I said, years later, she came to visit me again and she revealed to me that she did have some eating issues. I feel like I missed all the signs. I think she still had a good time. She always said that she enjoyed my food. But what are some of the signs that I could have been looking out for?
Well, I think one of the signs, if you're watching, is if somebody has a lot of food preferences, like over the top food preferences, like they don't like whole groups of food. If they come right away and say, "Oh, I don't eat any meat," or I don't like bread," or "I don't like rice," or "I don't eat any starchy foods," that's a kind of a red flag, especially with teenage girls. Certainly, you know, or young adults, that can be a red flag. It doesn't always mean that, but often what people do when they have problems with eating is they try to protect themselves by making the problem as small as possible and also making it more socially acceptable. That's why, you know, even though veganism is certainly a thing and it's something that, you know, I have a lot of respect for, we do see that as a red flag when we're dealing with teenagers and young adults, especially women. Because being a vegan is a good way of cutting out a huge number of foods from your diet and making it more acceptable to other people. And it's a way to protect the eating disorder because these behaviors are to protect the eating disorder. You know, taking very, very tiny amounts of food is, you know, a bit of a red flag. If you see somebody and they're taking, you know, it's a teenage girl and, you know, obviously they need a fair bit of fuel for their bodies to work well. And you see them taking very tiny amounts, like 2 or 3 teaspoons. And, or when they come home and they say, "Oh, I already ate somewhere else. I already went to McDonald's," or "I don't feel well. I have a stomach ache. I don't feel like eating." Those can be red flags. I mean, they can also be a thing. They can also be true. But if they're happening over and over again, then that can be a sign that you are dealing with somebody who really has a fear of food and is trying to reduce the confrontation around it. So they've got stories so that you're not like, "Oh, you're not eating my food," or you're feel, you know, not getting upset at them, because nobody wants that. But it's a way of reducing the confrontation while still protecting the eating disorder.
So if that's happening, what should we do? Like, if we see signs of that, do you have any advice for what we could do?
It depends on what you're dealing with. I guess the other sign I was just going to mention is if you have somebody who spends a lot of time in the bathroom after meals, that's a very common sign of somebody that's got bulimia. So again, you know, I feel like it's really important to be respectful to people and to not be drawing attention to that. So I've had students that I knew had eating problems, and my approach was to, you know, not put pressure on them. I didn't comment on any of those things. If there is a coordinator or if you're in touch with parents, I think it's really important to flag this behavior to them. Like, it's not a secret. It's not something that should be kept secret. You know, if you really see it and you have a big concern, then you can certainly say to the person, you know, depending on the age, "You know, I have some concerns about how you're eating, and I'm not making any judgment on you. I want to be respectful of you, but I'm concerned about your health." I think that's a reasonable thing to do. For me, being working with a high school program, I tend to go to the coordinators because that's the hierarchy of the high school program, is that we're not really supposed to deal with issues ourselves. We're supposed to go to the coordinators. They're in touch with the parents and the agency, and they also have a rapport with the child. So that would be my my approach. I think whatever you do, you need to be very respectful and remember that this is a mental health disorder. It's not usually a whim. It's not something they're doing just because they feel like it. Often the behavior is driving them rather than the other way around. And so it's just very important to realize that it is a medical problem. So if you had a kid that had, I don't know, a really bad rash, or if you had a kid that was, you know, barfing all the time, or if you had a kid who was limping and saying their leg hurt, what would you do for those things? Because it's a similar thing. It's an actual medical issue. So that's what I would recommend. But I think if you're dealing with it and you're not sure, I think, again, the key is to be very respectful, to not draw attention to, like, don't be saying, oh, you're not eating very much. My partner is really bad for that because he's a man. And, you know, he's never really had any problems or any dealings with people with eating disorders. Mm-hmm. He has a son, not daughters. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, saying, oh, you're not eating very much, or, you know, these things that are, you know, really uncomfortable. Like, it's, that's not very appropriate. It's disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Same as commenting on somebody's weight. Like, you should never just say to somebody, you might say it quietly to them, but never in front of people, oh, you look like you've lost a lot of weight. And not making it a good thing either. Like, we have in our culture, unfortunately, we tend to be, you know, if somebody's a little heavy and they lose weight, we're like, oh, you look so good, you've lost weight. If somebody has an eating disorder, that reinforces that behavior. It's not helpful at all. My policy, and I try to stick with it as much as possible, is that I never comment on anybody's looks and how they much they weigh or how much they don't weigh, because you don't know exactly what's going on there. And it can be, it's a very personal thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to do that too. The same thing with, I have a 3-year-old daughter, and I'm always trying to reinforce with my husband, it's not about how she looks. We don't comment about her hair or comment about what she is wearing, but maybe comment on the outfit she chose.
Yeah.
Or the books that she's reading. And it's all similar to what you're saying too, because I don't want to create any of those disorders in her. So we have that as a policy in the house, even with the students.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And I would add that if you have younger kids, like before, you know, the best way to make an eating disorder or make a disordered eating in somebody is to focus on what they're eating and how much they're eating and how much they need to eat or they shouldn't eat. Anytime that you do that, you're reinforcing the idea to them that they are not trustworthy to choose their own food or to decide how much they want to eat, or and that is a real problem. And you can create a really disordered eating with that kind of behavior if you're trying to control somebody's eating. When I have clients that come to me, I don't do pediatrics per se, but I have clients coming to me who are dealing with their own weight issues, and they've got kids that are already starting to pick up the tension around food. And my suggestion is always, don't comment on what people are eating, why they're eating it, or, you know, how much. Put the food in front of them, you know, whether it's a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old. When they're done, whenever the meal is done, that's it. Take the food away. Don't comment. You know, brace yourself to throw food away, because, you know, kids often don't want to eat what's on the plate. And there should never be any fuss made over that, because honestly, the more attention you draw to that problem, the bigger problem it's going to be. Actually, my older daughter has struggled with some eating issues. And when she was younger, she was kind of a picky eater. And her dad was very, he just had a thing about them eating everything. And it was a big, huge problem. And every dinner was just awful. And then once he started, he had to work in the evening and he wasn't home at dinner. And basically, I just did that approach of, you know, at that time, I did put food on the plates. That was pre-students. And so I would put it on the plate, and whatever wasn't gone after, you know, everybody was finished, I would take it away. I would say nothing about it. Mm-hmm. And she is now eats everything. She has no, you know, mm-hmm. issues with eating certain foods or having a lot of food dislikes. You know, I feel like that was the very best approach. Huh. Taking the pressure off food. I mean, the most uncomfortable thing at a meal is there being tension around food. Like, even for me, and I have a great appetite, if there's tension at a meal plate, you know, or if somebody's commenting on what I'm eating or not eating immediately, it makes me not want to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about yourself, if somebody was constantly watching what you were eating and saying, oh, you need to eat that, or, you know, you shouldn't be eating that, or you need to eat more of that, how unattractive that is. Like, for me, that makes me feel very stressed and not wanting to eat. So just thinking about how that feels when you're 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years old and you have absolutely no control over anything except what goes in your mouth, and then somebody's trying to push that on you, it can be very destructive to that future relationship with food. And ultimately, I think what we mostly want for our kids is for them to have a really good, healthy, enthusiastic relationship around food, because food is amazing and wonderful and also life-sustaining. And so we really want to promote that, you know, happy relationship with food, and not the idea that, you know, you need to control it because somebody else is going to try to push it on you in an inappropriate way.
So could I ask for some advice then? A 7-year-old who we put, maybe we shouldn't be doing it, but should we not be dishing up her food for her? Just put the food there in front of her and allowing her to dish up, because she will sit there for 30 minutes and not eat her food.
Yeah.
And then it's like a battle to get her to eat anything.
I think the best approach, there's a lady, you probably read her work, called Alan Satter. I think it's Satyr. Okay. She has written a lot on this whole, you know, concept of children's eating. Basically, the foods the child is eating. So you get to choose if you don't want them eating cheesies or you, whatever, you don't put those out. But once you've put the food out, it's the child's choice of whether they eat it, how much. Mm-hmm. So definitely there's two approaches. One is to just put the food out. Let's let her dish up, or else let her control how much is, like, you dish it up, but you say to her, so is one spoonful okay? Or do you want two? And totally up to her. And then that's it. And there's no pressure. It goes in front of her. If she does not eat it at the end of the time, then you take it away. You say nothing.
Okay.
You know, you can have rules around what kind of snacks, but not being too restrictive. With my kids, so my older daughter was a bit of a problem eater. And so we had a bit of a deal. You could have a banana or you could have yogurt if you didn't eat your meal. That yes. was, those were the only choices. Okay. That was it. No other choices. No toast and peanut butter. No second meal. And wait till the next meal. But again, trying to do it in a gentle and respectful way, just basically this is how it works here. You know, we don't make you eat and you totally can eat what you like, but these are the other options for you. And being consistent and not getting angry, even though it's very difficult not to. People get very upset about this because they can feel like their kid is going to starve to death. Most kids will not starve to death. And in fact, taking the pressure off the meal often over time, when they realize nobody is actually paying attention, even though obviously you are, but if you're pretending like you're not, they will start. And eating in a family is really important because that's how you model behavior around food to your children. So, you know, my stepson, he had a different diet before he started living with me. And it wasn't a bad diet. It was just a bit different. But he ate a lot on his own and he had a very small repertoire. And then when he came to us, we basically did what I do, put the food out. And, you know, my partner used to be like, oh, I don't think he's going to eat that. I'm like, well, that's okay. And he would eat it. Like, he eats everything now. You know, and I'm not taking the whole credit of that because obviously, you know, a lot of other people had an influence on him. But I think the fact that we had lots of different food and we offered it, and if he didn't like it, it was like, no problem, you don't have to eat that. He loves food now and he'll eat anything and he can go out to his friends' places and there's no worries about that he won't like the food because he does like most things. So I think that's a really important gift to give your kids, yes. Right?
Thank you. I'd like to take that battle away every night from our students of like, Fiona, you need to eat some more food. You know what I mean? Yeah. That stress of like, just please eat some food, anything. Yeah.
I think it's really, it's very hard as a parent. Mm-hmm. But I do think that best approach definitely is to take the pressure off it. Just ignore it. Just as much you can, ignore it. Okay. Give them the choice.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I appreciate that.
What about, I had a student once, they came here specifically for a nutrition for English class. So she came here with that in mind, but also came with a scale.
Where was she from?
Japan.
Okay.
Came with a scale and she was very, very concerned about not wanting to eat fats, no desserts. And is this something that we should be concerned about as a healthy relationship with food, or is this more of a cultural thing?
I think it's a lot of their culture in Japan. I don't know. I can't speak to be an expert on Japan or Japanese people, but what I have read is that, first of all, it's a fairly male-dominated society, and you do tend to see more body image issues in women who come from those cultures. Mm-hmm. They do have a big emphasis on not being greedy, not being gluttonous. You know, their food is all set up in a way that it's not huge portions, but it's kind of artistic, and, you know, they have a huge food culture, which is around art and food and not overeating. So I think, you know, if you get somebody that's coming from Japan with those behaviors, then you just kind of got to go with it. I don't think that, you know, especially at that stage of life, you know, somebody that's in probably their 20s or whatever, you know, that's been a pretty established, you know, culture. And if they did gain weight and go back to Japan, then they would be subject to, you know, some kind of bad feedback on that, I'm pretty sure.
Would that be the same for because I've had Chinese students too, where they're worried about how they will look or their weight when they get back home. Is that something, again, we should be concerned about, or is it just more of a cultural thing?
I think it's unfortunate. It makes me always feel sad for people when that's going on. But I do think you have to look at it in the context of the culture. And many people, they've probably heard stories because I had a poor little Mexican child. She was only about 14 and she was very small. And she gained about 20 pounds at my house. Oh, and it was from eating McDonald's. And her dad was really upset at me. And I said, well, it's not the food that I'm serving her because, you know, my kids all eat the same food and none of us is gaining weight. Of course, I took it a little bit. I mean, I was very polite, but I felt a bit personally offended because as a dietitian, right? You know, it's like, no, I'm not feeding your kid food that's making her get fat. But it was in fact that she had not had much freedom at home. And she came from a really like a very, what do you call it, traditional family where mom is at home and cooks all the meals. And there's a lot of food culture in Mexico too. But the people that, especially the higher income people, are very weight conscious. And so then she came here and she was going to McDonald's every day after school. And so, you know, being very small, she gained a lot of weight in a hurry. And I didn't actually know. My kids told me this. I didn't know that what was going on. My kids were like, well, mom, she goes to McDonald's every day. So I think there is a lot out there about how, oh, you go to Canada and study and you gain a whole bunch of weight. And so that's probably certainly the Chinese diet is, you know, it's a bit light on meat and, you know, the actual traditional diet. I think it's, I mean, you would know more than I do, but obviously, but I don't think it's necessarily a diet that is going to promote weight gain in people if they're eating, you know, and they're also a lot more active there. Typically, there's a lot of people walking and biking. I know I had a Chinese student and, you know, he biked everywhere, you know, that's how he got around at home. So I think there is, you know, culture. And there's also the knowledge that we do have access to a lot of fast food and things here. And if you have kids, you know, students, they're out socializing, they can put on a lot of weight and it's not necessarily what you're cooking them. So, you know, I certainly, with somebody like that, I would have a discussion with them about how, you know, the food I serve at home is pretty healthy. There's not really, you know, too much to worry about if you're eating the food here. But if you're eating out, then, you know, maybe you do have to be a bit more careful that if you're, you know, if you're going to meet your friends at McDonald's all the time, then, you know, maybe these are things that would be better choices if, you know, if that's something that happens on a consistent basis, you know, so they don't worry that it's your food, because I honestly don't think that most kids gain weight from their homestays. I think it's from the other stuff they do, the socializing and the eating out, you know, going like, again, McDonald's, the South American and Mexican students, they love the McDonald's downtown. My daughter used to work there and she said there were hordes of them there because it's cheap, it's central, it's right on the bus route, and it's a place they can go because there's not too many places you can go to hang out as a person that can't drink, like you're, you know, and they like to go out. And so they'd be there all the time. They would close the place. And so I think that's what they need to, you know, if you have students that are concerned about weight gain, is, you know, to just let them know, well, a lot of the fast food here is pretty calorically dense. And if you eat that a lot, then yeah, you might have a problem, but I'm going to do my best to give you food at home that's healthy and nutritious and doesn't promote, you know, weight gain.
Did you have any students that were interested in cooking with you, or that were good cooks and would share the dishes from their home countries?
I had a little bit of that, but I'm not very inclusive in the kitchen because I'm quite lazy. And so I like to do things usually, and I work late a lot till like 7 sometimes. And so mainly rushing around, you know, it's like, I just want to come home and do it.
Yeah, get it on the table.
Yeah.
Do what you know.
I did have a couple of, kind of strangely, not the long-term students, which I mostly have, but a couple of my short-term Japanese students they came and they had a plan and they cooked a meal for us. And it was really, really nice.
A nice gift.
Yeah. I thought the funny thing is that one of them, what they cooked was curry. And I had that point, did not even know that curry was a thing in Japan because I was very ignorant about Japan. This was way back in my early hosting days. And I'm like, gosh, curry, do you eat a lot of curry there? And they're like, oh yeah, we love curry. And it was just very funny because it was not something that I had ever thought about with Japanese, but obviously that's something that's entered their culture. So yeah, the short answer is not too many people. And we have boys now. And of course the boys, thank goodness the boy we have now, he can cook his own food, which is good because he likes to eat a lot. And so he cooks his own. And his mom, I guess, was very adamant that he be able to cook his own meals, like for breakfast and lunches, because he's going to be living on his own next year in university. So I thought that was a really good mom thing to do. Yeah.
It is good. What's your favorite dish to cook for students?
I cook a lot of different things. It really depends on the student. You know, I always find for most students, what I used to always cook for like a startup meal was like pasta with meat sauce, just because a lot of teenagers seem to like that. Or chicken is often safe because chicken is served in most cultures. So, you know, just baked chicken. I make so many different things. You know, we eat curry quite a bit because we like Indian food, and we eat a lot of stir fries because we have had a lot of Asian students. So I'm not very masterful at them, but they're edible. I do make a lot of stir fried rice and stir fried vegetables because, again, the Asian students like it. It's also bulky. Like, I used to have girls, and girls don't eat very much typically, but oh my goodness, I've had boys for the last, well, what, 3 or 4 years now, man, do they eat a lot.
They do.
When I first started with boys, I was actually appalled and like, oh my goodness, how am I going to feed these kids? Yeah. Like they just like vacuum cleaner. Yeah, Costco. And my friend who has two boys, she's a dietitian. She actually works with eating disorders in Toronto and has for about 25 years. But she says to me, yeah, get starchy foods, like make things that have rice based and make pasta casseroles and things that are bulky. The thing with boys is they like to eat meat too. So that's a problem because you kind of have to, we used to make these little chickens, like I'd roast a little chicken. It would be good for the whole family, like for a meal and sometimes leftovers when I had girls. But now it doesn't even do my family. Like I have stopped making those little chickens because they actually are not enough food for, you know, five of us when two of us are boys.
You'd have to like go after Easter and get those 99-cent a pound turkeys.
I know, exactly. Yeah, turkey's awesome. Yeah, turkey and ham are about the only things we have leftovers. Those are good too. You know, turkey and ham are nice. You know, they're very kind of North American. Yeah. You know, you can put a lot of different things with them. You have leftovers, which I love leftovers. Leftovers are my friend.
Well, baseball season right now, that's what we're living off of is leftovers. Yeah.
Yeah. We always look to see if there's any dislikes. We get a profile on the students and whether they have dislikes. First of all, we know if we can live with that, but also so that I'm aware if somebody has a dislike to something, and obviously I'm not going to cook that food. I've been cooking meals for a long time now, so I have a big repertoire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What have been some of the challenges for you for hosting? Any challenges that you've experienced?
Oh, yeah. We've had lots of challenges. I think it's always a challenge to integrate somebody into your family that has no history of your family. And I don't think we're not a particularly rigid family, but we still, things come up. The food thing is a bit of an issue. You know, this sounds really mean and stingy, but my partner likes cookies now and then. So he got a thing of cookies and my student comes out in the morning is like, oh, can I eat those for breakfast? And I'm like, no. You can't eat cookies for breakfast. Sorry, but you can't. He already had eaten about a half a cake for breakfast a few days before, which I let him do. But then I'm like, no, you can't eat cookies. He was quite annoyed at me too. I'm like, you know, there's cereal, there's toast, there's eggs and bacon. You can eat those, but no, you can't eat the cookies. And then I right away said to my partner after the student went back in his room, you need to hide those cookies because if not, there will be none left. Seriously, by the time you want a cookie tonight, there won't be any there. And that's an issue. You know, it's just, we don't want to be restrictive with food, but we also want to share it. And some of the students, they don't think, okay, there's 8 cookies in there and there's 4 people here. That means I get 2. They see the cookies and they're like, I get to eat those until they're gone. So that's a bit of a challenge. It just bothers us a little bit. I stick everything in the vegetable drawer. Nobody ever goes in the vegetable drawer. That's my little secret.
I love that. That is like the best tip.
Yeah, it is a great tip. Believe me, you stick it in the vegetable drawer under the potatoes or under the peppers, and I can almost guarantee you that nobody's ever going to look in there. So that's where I stick all my stash food, like my little chocolate bars or my oranges, because my stepson has discovered oranges now. And so if you buy oranges and there's 5 of them, well, actually my student ate 6 oranges one day. So there were actually, none left. So that's a bit of a challenge. And it's, again, we don't want to be stingy. We try to be generous, but that bothers us because it's the rule. Like if there's that much, then you have to split it among everybody.
Yeah.
We've had challenges with noise in the past where people were up talking at night and you have to get up. In fact, we did with this one, but he's learned now because we will get up and we'll knock and we'll say, you know, sorry, but you got to keep your voice down because we can't sleep because we have they're in the bedrooms upstairs with us. In the past, when I had girls, I had a lot of curfew issues. That was a pain because we have to enforce curfew with the program.
Mm-hmm, those are the program rules.
And the Mexican girls do not like curfews and the Brazilian ones do not like curfews because they have no curfews at home, apparently. So that was actually, I had students leave because of that, because I would have to enforce it. And I'd say, I'm sorry, but it's the program rules. And if you don't come home and then something happens, then I'm going to have a problem. So that was a bit of a problem. I think anytime you're parenting other people's children, it's a problem. Like we have struggles with our own kids and I went through teenagers and my older one was a real handful. But you can deal with them kind of right on face to face, whereas with other people's kids, they're not your kids. Mm-hmm. So I always found that was a bit of a challenge in terms of, you know, even establishing rules, because I'm a bit uncomfortable with other people's kids to say, you know, I'd really like you not to do that. Even that's just uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, me too sometimes.
Yeah, so that's a challenge for sure.
Yeah. It's sometimes too after the fact where they leave, they go back up into their room and I think, oh, I should have said this. Mm-hmm. Oh, I should have said that. And then I'll think, oh, I'll just tell them later when I see them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I probably should just go to their room, knock on the door and say, hey, this is what happened. Let's talk it through. Or, but yeah, I just feel sometimes a little uncomfortable with that.
It just doesn't sit right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult. And, you know, I always try to, like, I have my student that I've had for 2 years. And so if I, and maybe it's not right, but it's what I do with my own kids. If I say something and then I feel like it came out a bit too harsh or something, then I'll kind of like rub his back or I'll pat his shoulder to say, you know what, it wasn't, I didn't mean it that way. And he's used to that. I mean, I don't do that with everybody because some people, they have a big personal space, but I feel like he comes from a family where I think the parents, they have high expectations, but they're super close and they're affectionate. And, you know, so I think that's the hard thing is that you want to not sort of destroy their psyches. But at the same time, again, it's that irritation thing. If you're irritated, then it's going to come across in the behavior. And so being able to set, you know, boundaries. You know, I've had to do that because we've had the student for 2 years. If we have them for 2 months, then I can kind of grit my teeth and be like, okay, I can put up with this for a couple of months. It's not the end of the world. But if you have a student that's going to be living with you for a year or two, then it's really, I think, important to deal with things from the beginning because, or as they come up, because otherwise then you get a lot of resentment and it's not a pleasant experience for you. And then of course, if mom's not happy, nobody's happy because that's how it is, right? It's that saying, you know, if mama's not happy, ain't nobody happy. And that's true, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to, as mamas, we have to be able to, you know, establish the boundaries so that we're not feeling, you know, rubbed the wrong way all the time and, you know, irritable. But I think that's a huge challenge for sure. It is for me. Yeah.
What about positive experiences then? What are some of your favorite memories of some of your past students?
Oh, we've had a lot of really positive experiences. We've had the Japanese boy that I got had actually had a bad experience with another homestay. And I don't think it was just their fault. He was a bit of a hellion. I think he got in a lot of trouble. I found that out later that he got some trouble. But when he came to us, he was feeling a little bit kind of flattened and you know, just because it had been a bad, in fact, when I picked him up, the other homestay parent says to me, good luck.
Oh no.
My kids are like, did he say that? I'm like, yeah, he did. So as soon as we got in the car, I said to the student, I'm like, so what happened? And he's like, oh, I can't talk to those people or something like that. And so I'm just like, okay, obviously bad experience, right? He was really good with us. He was perfect. He never broke curfew. He didn't have girls over in his room. You know, he was pretty good, but he really seemed to like us a lot. And when he left, you know, I hugged him when he came back the second time, and I could, you know, it made me feel good because I could see that he was really comfortable with us. And then his mom came to come to his graduation, and she didn't speak much English, but she said through him, she's like, thank you so much for taking my son and taking such good care of him. Aww. You know, I appreciate that. So that's a lovely thing. I've had a couple of moms do that where they came and they said, you know, thank you so much, you know, for taking such good care of my child. And you know, that makes me feel good because obviously as a mom, you know, I would hope if my kids were somewhere else that somebody would be, you know, being loving with them and, you know, being respectful of them as somebody else's kid. And so that was really positive. Yeah, we've had students that I'm still in touch with. We still talk. One of our first students was an Iranian girl from Germany. I mean, her parents were Iranian and she was so nice. Like she was such a great experience and she, you know, she's kept in touch with us. And so we can kind of see what's going on with her. So lots of good experiences, you know, especially when you get the feedback from the parents that, you know, they say, thank you so much, because then you know that the child has had, you know, in spite of whatever the ups and downs, because there's always ups and downs, you're living in a house with somebody, there's never, at least in my house, there's never like totally nothing going on because there's always, I'm pretty forthright. So it's never going to be like nothing. But obviously it didn't damage them and they obviously felt that, you know, that we were doing okay for them.
Yeah.
So that was really positive. We've had kids from all over the world. I mean, we've had Chinese and Japanese and German and Brazilian and Mexican, you know, lots of Japanese kids. We took a lot of short stay ones and we're still in touch with some of them. We had one that came and he was by himself and he stayed with us and my partner played basketball with him every night. And his mom friended us and, you know, she's still on our Facebook and it's just very sweet because, you know, you've made a difference, even if just a short time. Obviously, that was, you know, a very positive, you know, experience. I was an exchange student when I was 15. I went to Germany for 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I was terrified. I was really timid and shy and hard to believe now, but I was very timid. And even the mom, and I'm still in touch with her, actually. I just went and spent some time with her daughter in Cyprus because they have a place there.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
But we have been in touch now for 40 years from that 3 week stay. And they're like my second family. Like, they were like most awesome people. And so I always think of that when I get new students, because I think about how I was absolutely terrified. I got off that bus. I'd never met these people. I felt sick. I was so afraid because I was so shy. And by the end of it, like, I cried when I left. And like I said, we kept in touch for years and years and years.
Oh my gosh. And there was no Facebook back then.
There was no Facebook. And no.
How did you keep in touch for so
just
long?
Just with letters. Yeah, with letters. That's it. Letters. That's all. Letters for years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I kept in touch with the daughter, and she's, like I said, she's the one I went and spent, you know, 3 weeks in Cyprus with this past year. And I went to school for a year in France, and I went and visited him at that time. That was about maybe 4 years after I had been there for my 3 weeks. And then the daughter's been over to us a couple of times. So, you know, I had of myself a really, that was the most positive experience. And her dad just passed away this year. And actually, one of the main reasons I went last year was because he was not well. And I was really thinking, man, I might not get a chance to see the dad again.
Oh, yeah.
And and I got a letter from the mom, kind of sympathy card. And she said, yeah, she says, you know, AB, she called him AB. AB always talked about our Carla.
Oh.
Yeah. After like 40 years. So that was like a profoundly significant relationship for me based on 1 3-week exchange like 40 years ago. So I think that we need to think about that when we have students, because that was 3 weeks out of my life, and it just changed everything in my life and has continued to impact my life very positively for years and years and years. So I think, you know, think about that when you have your students. You may have somebody like that that really bonds with you, and you may be 30 years from now, you may still be seeing that person and seeing their kids. And so, yeah, that was my experience.
I've never even thought about that far in advance. Like, I have had students where they've only been here for 2 or 3 weeks, and they don't speak English very, very well, but I still text them when it's their birthday.
Nice.
And things like that, because it might 2 weeks is a very, very short time, but you can really make such a strong connection with somebody that way.
Yeah, it's very impactful if you think about somebody coming from their country to a strange country for the first time, where they may not speak the language, and how much impact you can have on their experience. Like, it is a huge, important job. You know, it's really, I try never to forget that, even, you know, I'm busy and I kind of get distracted, but I think all the time, you know, this is a huge impact on this person, you know, much more than on us. You know, we have more decades of experience, and so it's a much smaller piece of our life. But for somebody who's coming to a strange country for their very first time, you're going to be the very first people they are dealing with in this strange country. You know, how is that going to affect their, you know, their impression and their relationship to Canada, right?
Yeah, we're stewards of the country.
That's right.
So is that one of your main reasons now for continuing to host?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think you know, I felt when I started doing it, was a single parent, and I didn't have any child support. So it was just me and my girls, and I had room in my house, and I always like to utilize things. I don't like to waste. And I got this house that had extra bedrooms. And so that was actually the start of it. My friend suggested it. A good friend said, you know, I see they're looking for a homestay. And so that's why I started it, because it was a good extra income. And I thought it actually be good for the girls. You know, and like I said, I had experience. I've worked in Saudi Arabia. I've traveled in Asia. I've traveled in Europe. So I felt like I did have a little bit of understanding of other cultures. And so I thought that I had something to offer. And so I guess I've just kept doing it, to be honest, because there's such a huge demand. And every time I think I'm not going to do it, then the coordinator comes to me and says, oh, can you please take just this one person? We're so desperate. And I think we have a good reputation as homestay parents. Like, you know, we do try to be kind, and we do try to treat them like our own. And you know, my partner's actually awesome with boys. Like, he's really much more engaged than I am. So, you know, I guess that's why we keep on, because there's a demand and they keep asking us. And we're like, every year we're like, oh, maybe we won't do this anymore, because, you know, it is work and we're not getting any younger. We're kind of lazy and, he's got a business, I've got a business, plus I work full time. But then we end up doing it, you know, I think, again, because they want us and it's nice to be needed. And also because we do feel like we offer something, you know, valuable to them. So yeah. I guess that's a long answer, but that's the answer.
Thank you so much, Carla, for coming on the show and sharing those great stories that really got Erin.
Thank you so much. Yes, thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate the opportunity and thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Homestay Kitchen, hosted by Mary Chan and Erin Eastman. Produced by me, Mary Chan of Organized Sound Productions. Web and show notes by Erin Eastman. Like what you're hearing? Write us a review wherever you listen. Or drop us an email at homestaykitchen@gmail.com. We would really appreciate it. For more information on this episode, visit homestaykitchen.com. And when you're ready to dish up your stories, connect with us on Instagram @homestaykitchen or on Facebook. Thanks for joining us.